Hi, everyone. I'm Hillary Kerr, the co-founder and chief content officer of Who What Wear, and this is Second Life, a podcast spotlighting women who have truly inspiring careers. We're talking about their work journeys, what they've learned from the process of setting aside their doubts or fears, and what happens when they embark on their second life. Today, I'm speaking with the co-owners of Fresh Vine Wine, Julianne Huff and Nina Dobrev. In March of this year, the pair launched their collection of premium, low-carb, low-calorie, gluten-free, and vegan-friendly wines available nationwide. Produced and bottled in Napa, California, the Fresh Vine Wine Collection features a Cabernet, a Pinot Noir, a Chardonnay, and a Rosé, all of which pair with an active lifestyle. But, as I'm sure you know, Nina and Julianne have lived many professional lives prior to their foray into wine. Nina is an actress, writer, and producer who most recently wrapped production on the Netflix romantic comedy Love Hard and the indie comedy Sick Girl, on which she serves as both star and executive producer. She also spent 6 seasons starring in the highly successful CW drama The Vampire Diaries and has worked on so many other projects in TV and film, it's hard to keep up. Meanwhile, Julianne is a certified triple threat. She was a 2-time professional champion on ABC's Dancing with the Stars before making a transition to award-winning recording artist and accomplished actress in the movies Safe Haven and Footloose. She's also the founder of her own production company, Canary House Productions, and founded an amazing fitness platform, Kinergy, which aims to focus your mind, sculpt your body, and ignite your life. The ladies are here to talk about their multifaceted careers and many pivots along the way. Now, on Second Life, it's Nina Dobrev and Julianne Huff. On this podcast, we like to start at the beginning. So, first question, Nina, Julianne, what did you guys think you were going to be when you grew up?
Oh my goodness. I don't know that I wasn't one of those kids that was like, I want to be an astronaut or like, I want to do this. Like, probably something to do with animals, if I had to guess. If I had to pick one thing right now that I can remember like aspiring towards, it was veterinarian. But now that I have an animal and I go to the vet, as an adult, I realize that usually dogs and animals are coming in if they have an issue. So you're just seeing sick or dying or, I mean, not always, but like it would be so hard for me. Like my heart would be hurting too much.
Way to open up a conversation, Nina.
Hey, we're getting into it. It's true.
I'm kidding.
That part would be so hard.
Yeah, it would be so hard. Or I'd want to take them all home with me. Like, I would end up stealing all the animals.
I think you should have done that and take them all home. I think that's a good plan.
But then I'd be in jail because everyone would go after me for stealing their animals.
Yeah, maybe hard pass on stealing other people's beloved pets. Yeah. Julianne, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, I was one of those kids who, like, changed my mind every 5 seconds. I was like, I'm going to be a dancer. I'm going to be a makeup artist. I'm going to be a hairstylist. I'm going to go to the moon. And when I actually really think about it, I'm like, actually, I was an entrepreneur. I wanted to be an entrepreneur as a kid because, you know, I loved creating. I loved designing and like always wanting to try something new and always creating. So I feel like that was just... Like, when I really think about it, it wasn't like, oh, I dreamed to be a dancer or an actress or anything like that. I dreamed to create and, like, do different things. And I think if you look at my career, it's actually quite indicative of what I wanted as a kid.
Totally. I mean, I don't think anyone has the words to say, I want to be a multi-hyphenate when they are 5, but that's kind of what you were going for.
Definitely.
So, Nina, you started working at a crazy young age in the grand scheme of things on Degrassi Next Generation when you were like 16, 17. Tell me about landing that job and what that experience was like. And more importantly, like, what were you learning? Because I was working at The Gap at that moment in time. And that is a different skill set, to put it mildly.
Yeah. I mean, to put it in perspective, I was working at Hollister when I was auditioning for Degrassi. I think the legal working age was 14 in Canada at the time. So I like, as soon as I turned 14, I got that job and I was like so excited to be in the workforce. And then I was at a performing arts high school at the time and I was doing dance and drama and we were doing singing and I knew I loved performing and playing and being different people and if I look back at it now, it's probably a form of escapism. But I just always loved doing that. And I didn't necessarily think it was a career path at the time. It was just something that was fun, and I loved it. And then once I started going out for things, and Degrassi, I think, was my first audition or my second audition. It was like three
You're
or
kidding.
Four in the same week. Yeah, and it was just, it was. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what a mark was. I didn't know. It was so awkward and uncomfortable. And my audition for Degrassi is online somewhere. I've seen it since, and it's cringeworthy. But in terms of what I learned over that experience,
yeah.
Everything. Because it was my first time on set, really. I did a couple commercials and things, but having to speak and hit a mark and be believable and not look at the lights or all the other, the boom operator who's got this thing in your face, like it was all so foreign and strange, and everyone was so nice and welcoming and probably very patient because I'm sure I made a lot of mistakes, and it was kind of like a little mini acting class course, and I learned the ins and outs of being on set. It was just sort of fight or flight at that point, to be completely honest with you. I was just sort of trying to survive.
Well, survive you did. And right after that, you went into another huge show, Vampire Diaries. What was it like going in now with at least a series that you had done? You had work under your belt. You understood the process. Was it different? Were there unexpected challenges? What did you know this time around that you didn't know when you were walking onto Degrassi?
Oh, for sure, a lot more. Yeah, I mean, well, for one, Degrassi was shot in Canada, so it was closer to home. It was more comfortable. When I auditioned for Vampire Diaries, I think I was in Canada and I sent in a tape, but it wasn't very good. Or something happened. I was sick on one of the auditions. I did a terrible job. And then I sent in a tape, I think, when I got back to Canada, and they really liked the tape. So I flew down to the States, and that was a whole new experience, too, just being in a new country and not knowing anyone. And once I got the show, I had to uproot again and move to Atlanta because that's where we filmed it. And I don't know, I definitely felt more comfortable in my own skin. Mm-hmm. A couple of years had passed. I'd been on set for a while. I'd learned a lot. I was more confident and comfortable, and the character felt a lot like me. It didn't feel too far-fetched. Whereas on Degrassi, I was playing a teen mom, and I was getting bullied for being a teen mom and being called a slut. It was just a different character, and I obviously had no personal experience in that exact space. So it was a little bit more foreign, whereas Elena felt a lot like Nina at the time. And so the biggest challenge and the biggest difference is that this was a much larger scale. Like, it felt like a bigger show, much bigger crew. It was like the show to get that year mm-hmm. in pilot season, and there was a lot of like pressure, and there was a lot riding on my shoulders, and I could feel that. But at the same time, I felt really supported, and it felt right. And everybody was really excited about it. And we were all so excited and happy to be there and couldn't wait to do this thing and have the world see it. And so it felt more like my baby. And we were a family that, like, I was there from the beginning, whereas on Degrassi, I came in a few seasons into the show. I wasn't one of the original cast members. So it also, you know, being a guest star and then having your character grow more was really flattering and amazing, and I loved it. But it was a whole different experience, like it being your show with your people and being there from day one.
I mean, it's like joining a company versus a startup that you founded.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay, so one thing that I think is so interesting, too, it's like this is your main job, but then you were still doing a ton of other projects, other films, like The Roommate and Perks of Being a Wallflower. What is it like splitting that time in between sort of your main job and then having these other projects? Like, how do you pick them? Was it different being on set for a movie? Like, how was that different for you in terms of what you were learning?
It was a little bit more like going back to the Degrassi days, because it was, yeah, we would just fit in films wherever we could. And the hiatus window was so small when I wasn't filming Vampire Diaries that I wasn't leading films. I was just sort of doing smaller roles and exciting projects that I wanted to be a part of. And in terms of the picking process, obviously it's the character, it's the people involved. You always sort of choose based on that. But also, does it fit in the window where I'm not shooting? Because we shot 10 months out of the year for Vampire Diaries.
And then you still decided to spend the rest of your free time shooting. That is crazy.
For sure. Yeah, I was a workaholic. And I did things that I could do at 20 years old that I definitely can't do now in my old ripe age. But yeah, the energy levels were much higher back then. I've definitely become more of a homebody.
Well, I would too if I was working that much. Speaking of working a lot, Julianne, you started your career also at a crazy young age, this time though as a dancer, and were winning world championships before you were even in high school. Can you tell me a little bit about those years after high school, your first jobs as a dancer, and what you were learning through those experiences?
Yeah, it's kind of wild. My journey started at 10. Well, I was living in Utah and living in this bubble of just this Mormon culture and going to dance. And right at 10 years old, my parents were going through a divorce, and we had these dance coaches that used to come to Utah and teach at our dance studio. And they were like, oh, Derek and Julianne, you guys are talented. Why don't you come to London? And so it was supposed to be 3 months, turned into 5 years. And yeah, I went from like the bubble of Utah to this big metropolitan city of London. I was quite disappointed when I got there, though, that there weren't horse-drawn carriages. But yeah, so going from Utah to London was just absolutely wild. And I was competing all around Europe every weekend. And I really didn't know any different. I was such a competitor, and you know, I was really taught discipline and work ethic. And unless I was like on my deathbed, I went to school and practice and competed regardless. I remember I had shingles, tonsillitis, and a sprained ankle, and I still had to compete, and I won that competition.
Oh my Lord.
Yeah. So like Nina, at the ripe young age, not now, there was so much more that I could do. Now I'm like, give me my Epsom salt bath and my bed. But I always knew that there was more that I wanted and that I felt inside of me that I wanted to be expressed than to be a ballroom and Latin dancer. You know, my career was kind of set as a pathway already, if I was going to choose that life, which was compete and then become a teacher and, you know, own a dance studio. And that was it. And there's nothing wrong with that. I just felt like there was so much more that I wanted to express. And so I remember at 15, I'd been there for 5 years. I was like, you know what? I want to go to LA. I want to act. I want to sing. I want to create things. And so I moved back. I had $2,000 I had like saved up from working at a physical therapy / boxing gym / scuba diving certification building. And I was, you know, the front desk worker, and they paid me under the table. I got $8 an hour. And then I made commission if I sold scuba diving equipment. So I was a really good salesperson. I made a lot of money there. Actually, I only made $2,000, clearly.
That is a lot of money at 15.
It was a lot of money, yeah. So anyway, I told my dad I had $5,000. I don't know why I thought that that would be more enticing for him to allow me to go to L.A. But I got to L.A. My apartment was $800. I was like, oh, this is going to run out real quick. And yeah, I just hustled my butt. Like, I remember I woke up. And I lived with 6 models, by the way. So they were these like gorgeous, you know, 6'2" models. I'm like 5'3". And I would be like waking up, like going to dance auditions, going to acting auditions. I'd get home at 4 and they'd just be waking up and eating Sour Patch Kids for dinner and like getting $12,000 checks in the mail. And I was like, what is my life? This is so hard.
Things turn around pretty quickly because you started on Dancing with the Stars when you were just 17, right?
I was 18. So yeah, it actually happened quite quickly. I was in LA, let's see, July of 2006. And then I got the Dancing with the Stars live tour as a background dancer in December. And I was like, great, I can go on tour and I can get rid of this apartment because I can't afford it anymore anyway. And then, yeah, I was on tour. And while I was on tour, my manager that I had, or I didn't have at the time, but ended up producing the tour, he ended up saying, hey, you know, do you sing? And I was like, yes, I do. And I want to sing country music. And then he's like, well, do you want a manager? I was like, what does a manager do? And so I was like, sure, why not? Very naive. And I just did it. But it was great. He was a big music manager at the time. And 3 weeks later, the producers from Dancing with the Stars came and saw the tour and asked me to be on the show. And at first I was like, no, I don't want to be a reality star. I want to be a respected actress and singer. And then my manager, my new manager, was like, you know, it's actually a pretty good deal. Like 20 million people a week watch this show, because this was obviously before streaming. And he's like, I think you should try to do it. And I was like, well, it's a 5-year deal. I don't want to be on, you know, for 10 seasons, 5 years. I was like, I'll do it if I can get out after 2 years. And I remember telling the producers that, and they were like, okay, little girl, like, that's not going to happen. And sure enough, I got out after 2.5 years. And I don't know what happened, but I had so much fire in me when I was 18. I wish I had a little bit more of that, like, fearlessness that I just, it's that naivety almost. It's like, you don't know what you don't know, so you just do you.
Right.
And that was, I think, one of my superpowers when I was a kid. I just did without really thinking. And I was like, oh, you tell me I can't? Watch this.
Is that the attitude that you took into music as well? Because you also started that at a young age, and your first album debuted at number 1 on the top country albums chart and went to number 3 on the Billboard Top 200, and you toured with Brad Paisley. I mean, that is so monumental. Did you have a whole plan for that, or did that just sort of happen and you went with it? What was the backstory there?
Honestly, I'm a really big believer in energy and
yes, you are.
Like, and like having like high vibrational energy. And I think I just really was like, oh, this is a goal of mine, and why can't I do that? Like, there was no question or doubt that it could happen. It just was like, oh yeah, anything's possible. So there wasn't a lot of fear behind it or competition. It was just like, oh, this is what I want to put my focus on, and let's do it. I know it sounds really naive, but again, like, there's almost a little bit of bliss in that. And sometimes I wish I could go back to that age of just like purity, you know, and innocence of like not being jaded. But yeah, I mean, I was really fortunate. I felt like the stars were aligned. It was a ripe moment. And I also feel, though, when preparation meets opportunity, that's when magic strikes, and that's when magic happens. And I prepared a lot. Like, I trained my butt off from 10 to 18 years old to feel prepared for when those opportunities came.
So, as if you didn't have enough going on, you also landed some pretty major roles as an actress. So, tell me about moving into that world. Did you feel prepared for that? Was that a big learning curve? Did it come naturally? Like, what was that process like?
In the moment, again, it just felt so natural. It felt so right. Everything just felt like I was in a state of flow, and things were happening. And I got Footloose and Burlesque and Rock of Ages, and all these things were happening, and then Safe Haven. And it was like, wow, this feels like a moment. And I just went with it. And I was really happy. I worked really hard. I connected, and I had incredible relationships throughout with the directors and the cast members and producers. And it just felt natural. Clearly, like, you know, looking back at life, I think there's some learnings that I've had and some perspective now that it maybe wasn't as easy as it felt, but it was definitely like a state of mind and an energy that I think I was in at the time.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I listened to myself even say that story, and I'm like, I have so much to be grateful for, because I felt like I was being pulled and guided rather than having to push.
Which is the most remarkable feeling.
Yeah. I mean, look, I feel like I'm fighting now. And so maybe it was just a time, you know? I remember that feeling of flow, and I'm like, that's what I want to get back to. And not that I need to get back to anything, because it's not that I can really hold on to that, but it's really about getting to that state of flow again. And I think, you know, just being older, you get jaded, you get told no a lot more. There's another generation coming up behind you. And so all of a sudden you have competition and fear that was never instilled in you before. And so it's about unlearning all of those things that were never innately inside of me. They were just learned behaviors. So that's what I'm working on now.
So I think something that also really intrigues me about the two of you is that you have these somewhat similar moments in your career of like working on a single project for a long time and then going on to a lot more opportunities. And then you also have both become producers, which seems like an incredibly different skill set to me. So Nina, you're an executive producer on your next film, Sick Girl, and set to executive produce the adaptation of Woman 99. And Julianne, you're the founder and CEO of, is it Canary House Productions?
It is.
So tell me a little bit about how the two of you, Nina, maybe you want to go first, about why you thought it was important to flex this different muscle, to learn this different skill set, and to take control of your career in a different way with producing.
It's funny you ask that because my brain first went to, I kind of felt like I'd already been producing and doing so much, and I'm so, to my detriment, and sometimes it's a wonderful thing, but I'm very hands-on with anything and everything I do. And so is Jules, I can tell you firsthand, especially now that we're working together in a different capacity. But we've sort of always been involved in every minutia, whether it's a project that we're hired on or it's a project that we're now producing. The one thing that I wish I had done is tapped into this energy sooner. Mm. Because when I was younger, I told you I was a little bit more confident in Vampire Diaries, but I hadn't fully found my voice yet. And I didn't really realize how much I could do and how I just wish I had taken advantage of it earlier. But there's something different about finding a novel and reading a novel and then developing it and speaking to the writer and acquiring the novel and then adapting it into a screenplay or coming up with an original idea and hiring writers. Once it's yours and once you can be a part of every step of the process, from the development to actually being on set to then going in the editing room, and there's just a sense of ownership and a sense of pride attached to this thing that literally becomes your baby. And Julianne and I are not in that phase yet where we actually have children of our own, so these are literally our children.
Oh yeah.
And it's been so fun, and the next step is obviously going to be for the world to see them, but it's just so much more involved and exciting when things happen. And as I get older, I'm also celebrating the small victories along the way in a way that I didn't when I was younger, because I was just like going, what's the next thing? And now in this phase of my life, I'm stopping, I'm being more selective, I'm creating things, and it feels fuller. Like, life feels a little bit fuller and exciting. It's so exciting to be in this new chapter.
Are there aspects to it that you really love or aspects that you maybe don't love as much? Like, I feel like there are, you know, certain things, even within my job, it's like I started my own company. It's something that I love, but there are for sure aspects that I'm not as strong at, and other things that are just like I could write or be in an ideas meeting all day. Do you find that with producing, or is it just all of it is new and fresh and fun and meaningful?
It's all new, fresh, fun, and meaningful. There's little frustrations along the way, as there are with anything you do.
It's slow, right?
It's slow. That's probably, yeah. Ironically, in COVID, it felt like things got faster because everyone was actually home.
And paying attention.
And in front of their devices. Yeah. And they had to, like, they weren't off at the Cannes Film Festival or the Toronto Film Festival and out of the office. So, like, people were actually in front of their laptops and answering emails and picking up the phone and talking. So, like, in a lot of ways, things felt quicker in this last year on the development side. But, yeah, I mean, I think once you create something, having to answer to other people and selling projects is obviously hard. And as Julianne mentioned, when you get a no, you take it even more personally when it's something that you've created. But it also gives me at least the fire to keep pushing, because I'm very persistent and I don't really take no for an answer.
Have you always been like that, or is that a learned skill because of your career?
I think that I've always sort of been like that. Yeah.
Nina is the most persistent person that I know. And I'm sometimes like, it's amazing. And sometimes I'm just like, I'm stepping away from this right now. I'm just letting her go. Like, she's a hustler and like a wheel and dealer. Like, if we go on vacation or something together, like, she'll figure out the best deal possible. And I'm just like, oh, I feel so uncomfortable in this conversation. I don't care. I'll pay the extra money.
To give you a little context and background, I was born in Bulgaria and I grew up in Canada. My family definitely didn't grow up with much and we didn't have the newest of anything ever. And so my whole life, I was always like trying to like figure it out and like Julia mentioned, hustling my way or faking it till I make it until I had to find the inn when there wasn't a door open. So for some reason, even as I've become successful and don't necessarily need to do something, I still like have that mentality kind of ingrained in my body.
We are who we are.
Yeah. I'm a little Bulgarian girl at my heart. Yeah.
So I want to talk about wine, but Julianne, first, before we do that, let's talk about producing for you. Obviously, like, producing is such a nebulous concept in so many ways, and it's so different for so many people. So can you tell me a little bit about what drew you to this path and some of what the day-to-day looks like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, like Nina, I feel like I've been producing my whole life, you know, whether it's me choreographing a dance or it's being super hyper involved in, you know, working with the writer on a character or having ideas about where the art could go. You know, that's just always been something that I love. And then even starting Kinergy, you know, like I love to create. Yep. And I love the business side of things and the operations of how it's made. I love the how and finding the how. I'm really great at like the why and the what and like the vision part. And then I'm not actually great at the how, but I'm super curious about the how. And so
that is very honest.
But I know what my skill set is and I will hire the hell out of somebody who knows how to do it. You know what
you
I
will
mean?
Hire the hell. Yeah.
I will hire the hell out of someone who knows the how and let them be the artist in the operations, you know, and let them shine there. Cause I know that like that is not my skill set, but I will create and on the creative side, the visionary side, the creative side, like the big picture ideas. That's what I love. So for Canary House, you know, we do everything from, you know, unscripted competition shows to, you know, we did the Disney holiday specials and we did Miss USA at one point, really when, you know, when shifted organizations and ownership. I'll just do that because that was a old organization. But we, you know, we took over and really changed the messaging of that. And like, I think for me, it's all about like impact and intention. And why I wanted to start a production company in general was to really fine tune what it is that I was putting out in the world. So to kind of go back to like what I was saying before about how everything kind of just felt like it was flowing naturally in my career. And I never really chose what I was doing. It was kind of choosing me. And I would do roles that really were kind of who I was and going through my life. But I never really got to like be super, super intentional with what I wanted to put out in the world as a contribution. And with Canary House, everything that we do, our mission statement is to tell stories about identity, transformation, and self-discovery. And that could look like anything. It could be horror. It could be any genre, as long as that's the core message. And so, like I said before, we do anything from competition shows, reality, scripted, unscripted. We do podcasts. We do, you know, TV, film. Honestly, we produce a wellness organization that is for people in the entertainment industry so that they stay connected to their health, you know? So like whatever it is, we're just trying to put goodness out in the world and feel like there's a bit of ownership in what you put out into the world instead of always being told this is who you are and I'm going to hire you to be that.
Proactive rather than reactive.
Yeah, I get to choose who I am and I get to put that out there and have an incredible team of like-minded individuals who have the same passion and belief system.
I love that. Okay. So it's 5 o'clock, which means we have to talk about fresh vine wines. I cannot believe that with all of your busy schedules that you have taken on something else, but I'm very excited because that's why we're here. So how in the world did the two of you decide to create Fresh Vine Wines, which came to market in this past March? I'm curious about the backstory. What was the white space that you saw in the market? And how did you end up going into business together?
Well, we drank a lot of wine.
Yeah.
Research, right?
Honestly, yeah. We had been researching it for years and years and years and years and even years before that. Jules and I met at a very pivotal moment in both of our lives when we were going through a similar thing, and we have often found ourselves celebrating with a glass of wine in hand, crying with a glass of wine in hand, laughing with a glass of wine in hand, or multiple hands, multiple bottles. Like, it's just always been something we've done and something we've enjoyed. And that's our – Julianne was mentioning her mission statement for her production company, but that's sort of at the core of our brand, is that we want to create something that will bring people together, connect them, and that will serve as a tool to make people happy and connected. And friendship is at the core of our company, and that's what Jules and I believe in more than anything. And so we wanted to bring something that's like a premium experience, and I think we've really created something really special here that we love so, so much and has been such a labor of love. And it's finally available.
So I'm curious about the biggest challenge in getting it off the ground and what part each of you have leaned into the most.
You know, I think the biggest challenge is the fact that it is a white space and a disruptive concept, and doing it in a way that is authentic and pure of intention. And I think that where we saw this white space was the fact that, you know, we love wine. We go out to dinner, we drink wine, we, you know, buy cases, and in the most humble way, like, we've had such incredible moments of travel and being able to experience something that's been really premium and luxury. And we're like, this is amazing. And we want to bring something like this to everybody where they can have this kind of experience. But it really is about the connection and the friendship. And then also, like, just getting older, like, both Nina and I, a few years ago, when I would drink wine, I would literally feel a headache and a hangover coming on within the first 5 minutes.
Yep.
And that never used to happen. And then, you know, Nina, she's gluten-free, keto, vegan. She's all the things.
I'm not keto.
But well, you're all the things.
I'm recently plant-based and I'm gluten-free. And so I couldn't drink a lot of wines. There are wines that are gluten-free, but most of them are not. And
what?
Yeah, and it's surprising as well that a lot of wines are not vegan either. So it's just, it was really important to both of us that our wine is as clean as possible, that we have no additives, that I can drink it. That was one of the biggest impetuses for me, because I wouldn't be able to drink wine normally.
And same thing for me too. Like, I just chose not to because I didn't want to feel bad, but I didn't want to drink anything else. Like, I don't want to have a cocktail. Like, I want a glass of wine with my dinner, you know? And so I think the challenge has just been like, how do we bring like the most premium taste and quality and not suffer on that, while also really trying to bring something that is new, that's focusing on lower sugar mm-hmm. and calorie intake, as well as that gluten-free, keto, vegan-friendly opportunity. And once we kind of nailed that with Jamie Whetstone, our winemaker, yep. we were like, holy moly, this is really cool. And we felt like, you know, we're living in a generation and a time when people care about longevity and what they feel like versus more so how they even look now. You know, people are finally, you know, mm-hmm. wanting to feel good on the inside. And so we just were like, this is cool. And at the heart of it is about love and connection. And that's pretty rad.
So I love the fact that on the website, you have a breakdown of sugar, carbs, calories, and ABV for each 5-ounce glass. I have not seen anything like this. Why was that important for you to include?
Well, the tagline for Fresh Fine Wine is the perfect pairing for your active lifestyle. So that is at the core of the brand as well. And that's who Julianne and I are. We're very healthy.
Holistic by nature.
We're holistic. Yeah, we work out a lot. We like to be active. But at the same time, we like to have fun and we like to enjoy the simple pleasures of life and indulge now and then. But we don't want to have to compromise taste mm-hmm. or the way we feel while we're experiencing good things. So That's why we felt like there was a white space in the market for a healthy wine. You won't have a hangover the next day. You'll feel good, but you'll still be able to enjoy your life because it's all about balance at the end of the day.
I mean, you had me at healthy wine. I'm all for that.
And it tastes good. And I know that I'm biased. I know Jules is biased, but that's why we want people to try it for themselves, because we can tell you all day, every day, that it's amazing, but we promise that the product speaks for itself.
So speaking of the product, for anyone who doesn't know, you have a really edited selection, which I appreciate because I feel like there are so many choices for everything, all of which are produced and bottled in Napa, which is also very cool. So you guys have a Cab, a Chardonnay, a Pinot Noir, there's an upcoming Rosé, and it seems like you're working on a limited reserve Cab, correct?
Correct.
So I know you're going to tell me that you love all of them equally, but I know you both have favorites. So please tell me what your favorite is and also how you decided to settle on this edited, curated lineup in general.
I mean, I'll say you can never go wrong with a Cab, especially like when like you're just with your girlfriends hanging out and there's something that just makes you feel warm and cozy and safe and comfortable and luxury and fancy all at the same time, you know? So like there's something that's just a Cab always just makes you feel warm and fuzzy inside. But I will say I'm a really big fan of our Pinot because I actually really love a light wine, a light blend and Pinots in general. And on the French side, like I love a red Burgundy. So like that to me is usually my go-to.
I agree with Jules. It's really hard to choose. It's like asking a parent which kid is their favorite. Like the Chardonnay is so buttery and then the Cab, like if I had to choose one, okay, like I agree with Jules. The Cab is probably my go-to. I reach for that one the most of all. But then at the same time, it's summer now and we just created this amazing rosé. And so that's all I can drink right now because it's hot out.
What does the rosé taste like? How would you describe your rosé?
Light and fresh and grapefruit hinted.
Ooh.
Yeah, there's a lot of grapefruit notes and there's some lemon zest. Ah. Yeah, but obviously like you don't necessarily taste the lemon, but it counteracts the acidity, even though you would think because it's an acid, but it actually takes the alcohol content and mixes it and it actually softens it. So yeah, you don't really necessarily taste it, but you taste it. You know what I mean?
Okay, so I started Who What Wear with my friend Catherine, and everyone tells you don't work with your friends. But, you know, it's going to be 15 years this October, so something has gone well. What advice would the two of you give to someone who is considering working with a friend?
Why don't you give us the advice? We're only a couple of years in. You have like 13 years on us.
Literally, Nina, you took the words right out of my mouth.
Well, I mean, you surely must have some learnings right off the bat.
I have one thing, and I think I may have stolen this from Julianne, but it's to steal all things from your partner. No. Jules has said this a couple times, and it's very true. It's just that everyone is a unique individual, and everyone has their strengths and their weaknesses, and it would behoove any duo, whether they're best friends or not, to let each person shine. And if one person loves the aesthetic and doing product design and labels versus the other one who has a better palette, maybe, and if we're talking about wine and can sense different things, like let each person kind of take over whichever lane they want to and talk about it and be vocal so that you're not like expecting the other person to handle something. Like that's one thing that Jules and I have been very, very good at.
Letting each other shine.
Yeah, and communicating.
Yeah, as well as like, you know, there's not enough hours in the day for both of us to do everything. Mm. That's not smart, you know, like divide and conquer so that we can also enjoy the process and versus feeling like it's, you know, it's taking all of our time. So like, I know I got this from like Rihanna and Nikki, yep, who own 901 Salon, and they're very clear on what makes them happy and what doesn't make them happy in regards to the business. And fortunately, it's opposites for them. So they're able to balance their work-life side of things as well. And I know, you know, like between both of us having production companies, both of us still having our own self-expression in acting or music, or I'm doing Kinergy. It's like there's so many things that take us, you know, and lead us down a different direction. And so it's like, just be honest and clear from the beginning. Like, these are the things that excite me, and I know I can give my full energy and attention, and it's not going to suck or drain the life out of me. Mm-hmm. And these are the things that I don't want to do. And it's just as important to identify the things that you don't want to do as much as the things as you do want to do. And that way, there's no surprises down the road, and you can just be very clear from the get-go.
So I really believe that the things that we learn in our first lives, so like the first part of our career, have wonderful applications to the things that we evolve and do in our quote-unquote second lives. So I'm wondering if you could tell me a skill from both of your first lives that you have brought to this project as entrepreneurs.
Flow. I said it earlier, like, I want to get back to that sense of flow where I felt like the universe was just kind of like working for me, but mm-hmm. with the wisdom that I have now of intention and grace that I want to put into everything. So it's finding that balance of like, when you're younger, you just go, you know, like there's no second guessing yourself. You don't have enough information to second guess yourself, you know? So it's like just this beautiful wonderment of just like fearlessness and flow. And then now taking everything that we've learned and really putting just the nuggets of encoded energy of like connection and friendship and nurturing and like just goodness into the world. That's what I want to do in everything I touch or put into the world. And that's no different for a fresh vine either. You know, it's a product that's different than anything we've ever created before, but it has the same intention and passion of like just fluidity and love and all of those things.
I mean, Nina, your hustle has to be a part of this, right? Because you don't just start wine without any background in it if you're not willing to put in some legwork.
For sure. No, you're absolutely right. And there's a sense of like a desire to succeed yeah. has never left me. And I think the difference between when I was younger and my first life is just that it would be a lot more careless. And like Julianne said, I would just do and wouldn't really think about what the consequences were necessarily. And now I'm a lot more thoughtful and precise. But I definitely, you're right. I mean, every single time I go out to a restaurant now, I'll ask to speak to the manager and I'll be like, do you guys carry fresh fine wine? Have you heard of it? It's really good. You guys should try it. Like it's da da da. Like I'll send you the, you know, actually my friend is involved with the company. I can set you up for the call with her business. And like, I'm like going door to door to restaurants. So yeah, that hasn't really left. It's still a part of me, but I only do that at places that I feel align with our brand and
right.
that share the same ambiance and energy and the thoughtful, holistic approach to life. And so, yeah, it's just a little bit more intelligently calculated and meaningful, I suppose.
That makes complete sense. So on this podcast, we like to talk about mistakes also because everyone makes them, but we all, like, the world is just an Instagram-filtered version of things. And I think it's important to talk about them. So I'm hoping that you too can tell me about a mistake that you've made in your career and what you've learned from it, because they really are just, you know, lessons, right?
For sure.
Oh my gosh, where do you even begin? You know, I feel like the biggest mistake, and I think it comes from obviously the way I was raised or my past or whatever, is like feeling like I have to do everything on my own mm-hmm. and I don't have to do everything alone and I have to control everything and be responsible for everything. I think that's been my biggest mistakes is that like, oh, I can do this on my own. And then feeling one, just like the loneliness of doing it on my own. And then two, the feeling of like full responsibility and stress that I didn't need to have because mm-hmm. I actually had people around me that wanted to work with me or help me along the way. But it was a distrust that I had that like nobody's going to do this better than me or that they don't know it like I know or they're not going to believe in it as much as me when, you know, I needed to let go a lot of that control and responsibility and allow people to be there for me along the way. And that's probably some of the biggest mistakes that I think I've learned in my previous life, in my first life. Whereas this life, I'm like, bring on the collaboration and bring on, you know, I don't want to do this alone anymore. In fact, I have no desire to do any of this alone.
Well, that's why we're doing it together.
Hell yes.
My mistake is that I was afraid of making mistakes as well, because you learn so much from the mistakes, and every little mistake is a step in the right direction towards getting to your ultimate goal. If you know that everything's going to work out exactly like it's supposed to, if you have that confidence, then it will.
So a lot of the folks who listen to this podcast are interested in switching lanes or trying something new or pivoting in some way, but they're scared. They haven't quite done it. So what advice would you give someone who wants to make that leap but just hasn't quite gotten there yet?
There's a lot of fear behind making a big change because it's such a big decision and it feels like there's going to be huge consequences if it doesn't work out. But if you lean into the fact that life is messy and that no matter what you do, you can't search for perfection, that's what I've learned over the last 10 years. I feel like if you sort of release and just follow your gut intuition, and because you really do know if something is right for you or if it's not, if you really listen to your heart and not your head. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Yeah. So my other tagline for Kinergy is, it's not about perfection, it's about expression. And it goes back again to like that childhood fearlessness that we used to have when we were kids. Like if you think about when we're kids, like sometimes we touch the stove without knowing it's hot. And then we get burned and there's a consequence, right? And now we're afraid of this stove constantly. Clearly, we don't want to get burned. But if you didn't know that and you just kept going or whatever, like maybe burning was the wrong analogy for this. But like all I'm trying to say is, we're not worried about, whether Nina said it, the failure or doing it perfect or right or wrong, we just do. And it's about your own self-expression. And if you feel the urge to like discover yourself in a new way, like your soul is telling you something, listen to it.
Okay, so my last question is also my favorite question, which is, if you could go back in time and speak with your younger selves and give yourselves a little advice, what would you say?
I would just tell her what I just said, honestly. Relinquish control and stop trying to make everything so perfect. I was so, so obsessed with, you know, doing everything the right way. And it caused me more stress and anxiety than I needed. And I would have been happier and more successful in the less perfect approach.
I mean, I don't know. I'd tell my younger self, like, just trust yourself. This might be a very egocentric way of thinking, but trust yourself and always come back to yourself. Like, instead of putting the control in like what others think of you, or are they going to approve this, or are they going to think that this was good enough, and bringing it back to yourself, like, do I like this? Do I feel like I gave it my best? How do I feel in this moment? To just constantly come back to like trusting myself. And it's kind of a paradox, because I said I didn't want to be alone and I wanted to work with people and take away the control and responsibility. But at the same time, I have to trust myself enough in order to allow others in. And I think that that's what I would tell my younger self, is just to trust yourself. Like, you know, in your core, you know, you don't need to go outside of yourself to get the validation or the approval from others.
I love that. Ladies, I can't tell you how much I enjoyed this and appreciate the two of you. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you. You're such a pleasure to speak to, and I love this.
Thank you so much. You're the best.
That was actress and producer Nina Dobrev and dancer, actress, and entrepreneur Julianne Huff, the co-owners of Fresh Vine Wine. For more inspiring interviews with women like Nina and Julianne, head on over to secondlifepod.com, where we have so many more for you to peruse.
If you like today's show, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to rate and review us. We love seeing you spread the word on social, so make sure you tag us in your posts. We are at Second Life Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We always want to know who you'd like to hear from on the show, so send in your requests to hello@secondlifepod.com, or you can DM us on Instagram. I'm at Hillary Kerr. The show's at Second Life Pod. Our DMs are always open. I'm Hillary Kerr, and you've been listening to Second Life.